B-Pod Studios.
Online with us right now, a man who his passion and love for Philadelphia really it matches anybody ever. The great Kevin Negandhi from ESPN and Temple University. Not too bad either. Kevin, good morning, man.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Bob. Appreciate it. And I'm glad I could catch you guys in the tail end to hear your comments about Trey. He's a good man, and we wish him the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. Kevin, so many things to get into, kind of about the state in sports, state of sports in general. And we also want to ask you about a new theory that has come out about the Sixers and Joel Embiid and ownership. So we'll get to all that in a second. But what I want to start off with is this idea of the NBA having a 16-game tournament that could be decided by three-game series or as a last worst-case scenario, a single elimination tournament possibly in Las Vegas or maybe even Atlantic City. That name's been thrown, that city's been thrown out there as well. What would you make of it, and do you think the NBA is really going to go in that direction as a tournament to crown a champion for the 2019-2020 season?
Well, you got to get creative, right? You have unique times now. I think the idea of trying to finish the regular season, it doesn't seem to be realistic considering the times that we're in and the timing of the season. And you know, yesterday I was playing a scenario out that just end the season. You know, just the top eight teams on each side, they get in. So you have a 16-team potential tournament. I think it's doable. I think it could be exciting and fun. And I think it's the distraction down the road that we all desperately need and want. I think the players want to play. So, you know, you got to throw everything on the wall to see what's going to stick. So this is, unfortunately, abnormal times. So you have to be creative. And so I think an idea of a tournament would be fantastic. A single elimination. Can you imagine, guys? The four quarters and the ability, like, just think about how we saw the competitiveness in the All-Star game. Think about that for four quarters, stepping up every single guy on the floor, aware of the moment. I'm all for it. I think that we may be better served on a best of three, and maybe a best of three to the final two rounds, because I think you can get a better product that way. But for a tournament to come together, I think it makes sense. Hopefully down the road, we see it sometime in the summer, but obviously, it goes without saying our safety and the idea of being smart over anything else is the biggest thing. I want sports to come back. I think everybody does, but we don't want a setback, right? So
right,
we've got to make sure this is thorough and vetted out. The idea that this could be in Vegas is fantastic. Or Atlantic City. I love that you have one place and one location and then you can get everybody together. But until we get the right testing where everybody can get it tested potentially on a daily basis going in and out of the arena, unfortunately, I don't know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if you sound like you might be like me, Kevin. I'm in a school of when I hear baseball say, oh, May 15th, hopefully, or I see the president say, oh, the end of April, you know, I'm like, yeah, I hope so. Like, I understand that might be a good goal, but anything that gets thrown out about a start date or an end date to social distancing or a start date to baseball or whatever it might be, my first thought is, yeah, we should be so lucky. So it's kind of like we're going to the beat of that drum.
Mark, I agree, especially with what Toronto said yesterday, basically no public events. Now they said, of course, it doesn't include sporting events because you could have it in a private arena with no fans, but no public events till June 30th. That, as of yesterday when they made that announcement, that's 91 days. So I think we're better served, at least this serves me with my mental state, that take it 1 month at a time, but at the same time be prepared that it's going to last multiple months. And I think if we take that approach, instead of putting these deadlines of mid-May, it's just not fair. It's not reasonable. But if you take it, let's see where we're at in April, at the end of April. Let's see where we're at the end of May. Now, I understand these leagues also have to look at logistics and making sure we have everything in place. But in reality, that's on the back burner until we can figure this out as a society and then move on. My biggest fear, and it's picked up conversation in the last couple of days, you know, with Kirk Herbstreit, my colleague, mentioning that you know, the fear of not having a college football or NFL season. Because once we get into September, October, if we don't have better testing, if we're not closer to an idea of, okay, where are we slowing this down and flattening this curve, it's going to be a long, I mean, you think March was long? Oh my goodness. 2020 may be the longest year of our lives.
Yeah, it already is, Kev. I really feel that way, it seems like. But I want to go back to last week, Kevin. And you grew up a Sixers fan, and you and I have had conversations about them, and you went through the process, and you know the ownership group. You're in the trust tree here. I just want to know, what was your reaction last week? We're not even 10 days into this pandemic, and Sixers ownership group comes out and says they're going to cut salaries of people that make $50,000 or more a year by 20%. What was your take on that? Did it, as a fan, did it kind of leave a sour taste in your mouth, or were you more understandable to it?
I thought it was tone deaf. I talked to a handful of people inside the Sixers organization, and a lot of people are hurting from that decision initially. Yeah. And I was shocked the decision was made, especially when you look at the grand scheme of things on how much real money you're saving. I've never understood this. And, you know, later on that week, we had Michael Rubin on SportsCenter talking about what Fanatics is doing in their initiative to help, you know, make, you know, a million masks and gowns to help people in the Northeast. And I thought that was a great initiative. It was a great concept of making use of the materials that you have. And I thought Rubin handled it really well. What I still don't understand long-term here is this mentality that fans always side on the billionaires versus the millionaires, when we're seeing a lot of the millionaire players step up and donate money and their time and their willingness to make sure everything's okay. And it's always the players that are stepping forward, and where's ownership? And this was one of those things that fell into that, where it's like ownership in every single league needs to step up and make sure they are aware of their fan base and the people that they are affecting with every single decision. This is not a bottom line thing. Now, granted, they became billionaires because they're worried about the bottom line. But we are also talking about humans here, and humans within your own company. And the idea of making sure that they could sustain a life while dealing with this pandemic. So I thought it was tone deaf. It didn't hit the right chords. But I also thought that, you know, the reaction from Michael Rubin later in the week, the reaction from the fan base, of course, Sixers Twitter, which I love because we wear our passion on our fingertips, not on our sleeves, but our fingertips every time we tweet something out. And they were loud on this, and they needed to be. People needed to hear that this was the wrong decision to make. And, you know, this also had a domino effect, guys. Because that reaction, that take back, that decision that the Sixers admitted that they made a mistake, a lot of owners in the NBA and the NHL, they were all watching. They were watching how the Sixers ownership handled this and what was going to be the fallout. And after you saw the negative reaction, it was fierce within 12 hours, they had to pull back. And owners, I think, around the Professional Sports League in North America realized, we can't do this. It's going to be a PR nightmare.
Right.
And if you're trying to save, what, $3-4 million on your payroll, and then you're taking a hit PR-wise like this, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I'm glad they came to their senses, and I'm actually glad that they're turning things around this week with what they're trying to do and, you know, providing Chromebooks and food to people in the area, because that's the stuff we need. Because this fan base is so loyal, and I'm glad, Bob, you brought up, you know, we go through the process. They went through a lot of L's, man, a lot of L's, and they still supported the team, regardless of the situation.
And 72 L's
what,
1 year.
Still going to be around, you know?
Right.
So realize that.
Yeah. Speaking with Kevin DeGondi of ESPN, great representative of Philadelphia as well. And Kevin, on that note, there's a theory put out there by Bob Ford of Inquirer.com that there's a possibility that Joel Embiid rubbed ownership the wrong way in upstaging them, really showing them up once that decision was made, he said, all right, you know what, $500,000 to COVID-19 relief, and I'm going to help the 76ers employees that are affected by this 20%, up to 20% pay cut. So there's a theory that this might actually harm the relationship between Joel Embiid and ownership to the point where they might look to move on from him sooner rather than later in terms of not finishing his career in Philadelphia or maybe even his days being numbered here in Philadelphia. Do you think I side on the side of I don't think it's going to affect it like that. Where do you side?
I don't think it's going to affect it to the extreme of now, oh, we got to move on now because of this one action. I think the biggest concern overall has been with Joel. And Joel, listen, Joel doing what Joel did last week, it shows everything about Joel Embiid, right? It shows that there are many moments that he is aware of who he's talking to. And Joel is very aware of a fan base. Because granted, people have gotten upset with him this season, but Joel needs to be him, and that Joel is a troller. Joel likes you know, stirring things up with everybody around him, and honestly, that's who he is. And if you work it in a positive way, I think everybody benefits, and he worked it in a positive way.
Yeah.
So I'm not here to defend Joel, but I also think that that's not the reason why if something down the road were to happen where Joel is not wearing a Sixers uniform, and you know, I hope that never happens because he's actually my favorite current athlete in Philadelphia. If that were to happen, I think it's because of, can he stay healthy? Right. Is this a right fit? And do the two biggest pieces, can they work together? And I mean, it's nice to talk about something outside the pandemic because that was what we were dealing with. Do we have the right system in for both these guys, and that is of course Ben Simmons and the Joel Embiid, to work together, because I think they can. It's just making sure we get the right system.
I want to switch gears away from the pandemic entirely now and take a step towards football. Yannick Ngakoue, I will call this heavy petting. I don't know. Heavy flirtation. I don't know what he's definitely into us. I think he's into us, Kevin. I think he's into us a little bit. Is there any chance, like a significant chance, I'll say that Yannick Ngakoue becomes an Eagle next year?
I think we've all had those experiences where, you know, the pretty girl in the room is maybe into us and winking at us, and you're like, oh, and then we realize, this date is going to cost me $1,000, and I'm bringing maybe $100 to the table. So that's where we're at with the Eagles here, because it works twofold, right? Not only do you have to give up some draft picks and high end draft picks when you're trying to get younger, you've got to pay them, and you've got to think about you know, other cap implications, like potentially Zach Ertz sitting right there. So I think that it's twofold. Yannick may want to flirt with us, but Yannick needs to understand we've got a lot of other things that we have to take care of, and primarily we can't afford to give up, I think, two number ones, or an idea of giving up a number one and losing the chance of drafting a franchise wide receiver.
Right.
And that is the, I mean, to me, entering this draft, Howie needs to hit on two of his three wide receiver picks. And I think they need to draft three wide receivers. He needs to hit on two of them. And when I say two of them, impact players, and I may be overreacting, but I think that's where we're at when you look at the wide receiving core here in Philadelphia. And the concept of growing younger offensive players around Carson Wentz. Because if you bring in two stud wide receivers, not as free agents, but as rookies coming in, Carson's voice gets stronger and stronger inside that locker room that this is my offense. So think about that. We've brought in guys like Deshaun from the outside, Alshon from the outside, you know, veterans that I think that they were key pieces, especially Alshon, but we also need to make sure the quarterback, who's our franchise quarterback, has complete control of this offense at all times. And so I think it's important that we need to nail that 21st pick overall. And I would do everything we could to get Justin Jefferson out of LSU.
Oh, you're right.
Okay.
Wow.
21.
All right.
Ooh. I don't know if he's going to be there at 21, guys, but I think he is going to be a stud. Granted, I'd like to get inside the top 15 when you're looking at some of the other options, because I think CeeDee Lamb and Judy is a phenomenal route runner. I think CeeDee Lamb is one of those electric type of guys. Ruggs, the burner, who could do a couple of other things. I think when you look at Justin Jefferson, he can do a lot of those things at a very high level. And just watch the tape. Watch the tape of the three biggest games and what he did in those games this past year. You'll walk away and say, that guy can help a quarterback win games.
So, Kev, is this draft a bust if they don't get one of those four receivers in your mind?
Well, it would be disappointing. I'm already saying they're not going to get the first three choices. Are you looking at Denzel Mims there potentially? That's the kid from Baylor. If they lose out on, but Justin Jefferson, I believe Howie will make sure the guy that they want is the guy that they get. I'll just put it like that. Now, I don't know who they want, but it's not realistic to give a boatload to, you know, move up to get Judy if potentially you're going to get talent at 21, right? So it all depends on if you're looking at what you need for this offense and you're desperate to help and you didn't go out and get in a free agent wide receiver and you're desperate to help this quarterback who is your franchise guy and you're allocating over, you know, $100 million to him. You need to give him the chance to have an electric wide receiver. And I just think Justin Jefferson's that guy. My biggest fear is when you look at some of the teams in front of them, especially that star, what's Jerry going to do a few picks in front of the Eagles? And how are they going to approach this? They've got to do some things on defense. And my biggest fear is what do they get? Because if a guy like CeeDee Lamb were to drop in their lap there, I'd be pretty upset. So.
Right.
I think they've got it. They've got to get a wide receiver in the first round. They've got to get another wide receiver in the, somewhere in day two, day three, and they've got to get one more cornerback.
All right, Kevin, real quick, because I know you like us, you're at home a lot more than usual now. Are there a lot of Nerf gun fights in the Gandhi household? What are you guys doing to pass the time?
Oh my God! So we've got a variety of different games. So I've got a kid about to turn eight. I've got a 6-year-old boy as well as a 3-year-old girl. So, you know, what we do during the 9 o'clock hour, we've got a huge schedule. I got to go into work later on today, but we've got a huge schedule that we follow. When I say huge, we go by hour, right? So, you know, from 7 to 9, they could do whatever they want, watch TV. We have breakfast. From 9 to 10, we do activities. And that is, we've got a fictional football game where we call it the season. It's been inspired by one of my cousins and his two kids, where we play a 16-game schedule, and they go out for a pass. If they catch the ball, we're doing this indoors with a Nerf ball. If they catch the ball, then it's a win. If they drop the ball, it's a loss. We play a 16-game schedule, but they've got, like, the key is trying to get the bye. They've got to get the 11 wins to get the bye to make it into the playoffs. So when we get into the playoffs, and, you know, both of them usually are 11-5, 12-4, because I make sure that they're not going to feel too good about themselves. They've got to set some challenging passes. Then they cover each other in the playoffs, and we have a playoff battle, and it works out well. They're completely intrigued. They love the concept. If we don't do that, we then get our gloves and we play baseball, and we go 9 full innings. I throw grounders at them. We play every scenario on who's up, who's not up, and we go through the entire Phillies lineup. And then they pick the opposing team that we want to beat. Usually it's the Mets. And then we go through their lineup. And the Mets are always, always one hit, two hit, you know, because their lineup can't hit in our minds.
Wow, you are breeding future sportscasters.
I
want to
be
athletes.
A kid in the Gandhi house.
Can you adopt me?
We keep it entertaining, and then from 10 o'clock on, we do academics for an hour, and then we do a lot of other, you know, and then maybe later in the afternoon before I leave, we do Papa Shaw with the tournament. We have a bracket where 64, you know, like we do the whole thing. It helps me. It helps them. They've been handling it really well because kids are not aware of the situation, and
right.
to make them be active, but at the same time where we can learn and still be passionate about, you know, our Philly teams, that's important.
Good for you.
And finally, the last thing we have for you is a matchup in our own bracket of best Philadelphia sports. Was this moments, Bob?
Memorable sports plays in Philadelphia history, Kevin. I put a bracket of 64 together. All right? Most memorable
plays. Yeah, I want to hear more of this.
Okay, so here you go. I'm going to give you a matchup. I came up with 64 of the most memorable plays in Philly sports history. I'm going to give you a 7-10 matchup out west, all right?
Got it.
2008, Chase Utley, fake throw to first, throw out at home, game 5 in a 3-3 game of the World Series. That's the seventh seed. Versus 2012, Claude Giroux hit on Sidney Crosby to open the game, and then a goal 32 seconds later in the game six clincher against the Penguins. Which one you got?
Man, anytime you could take down Sidney Crosby is a good one. and I like Sidney. And I say that because, you know, my job, you know, I like Sidney the person, but as a fan, it's like, get him. You got to go with Chase. We're talking about the World Series and stepping up in a big moment. And to me, nothing could touch 2008 when we talk about Phillies baseball. So the seven seed advances.
All right. Good man.
Kevin, thanks so much. Good luck with you and your family and obviously work with all that's going on. I really appreciate you gave us a lot of time today. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much, Kevin. Be well, buddy.
Hey, Mark, Bob, thank you so much. And to everybody listening, I think I speak for you guys and everybody at the station, everybody at ESPN. Thank you to the first responders and all the healthcare workers. Just words can't describe it. You're our real heroes, not the athletes that we cover. It's what you guys are doing on the front line. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Well said. Thanks, Kev.
Stay safe, guys.
You too. Kevin Agande, ESPN, taking some time out of his day to hang out with us here.
Mark, come on. Tell me you don't want to be a kid in his house.
I talked to him, I think the first time I interviewed Kevin, it was a Skype interview, and he had to move Nerf guns out of the back of the shot because it was covering up one of his, like, I don't want to call it a mantelpiece, but like you have in the background of a TV shot, so to speak. And he was like, hold on, let me just move some Nerf guns. And I was like, oh, you guys are a big Nerf gun family. And he goes, oh, like every day, my kids love it, man. It's just insane. So to hear the evolution of the activities in the Nagandi household is quite impressive. Like, it's not just going out and playing baseball. It's a game within a game. He's playing the game of baseball with situations being presented to the kids, and also playing a 16-game NFL schedule with a bye week, a first-round bye in there as well. That would keep my attention as a kid. And the first 2 hours of doing whatever you want, that's pretty clutch. It's not just wake up, do what I tell you. It's wake up, get into the day type of thing.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.